This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. You're tuned in to Tapped Out. Hosted by Brendan Tobin and Sean Levine. Only on the BetQL Network.
Welcome into Tapped Out with Brendan Tobin. I am the sports machine, Sean Levine. And, dude, you were in the house for what might have been the best UFC card in, I don't know, the last decade, 15, 20 years ever. That card was awesome. Talking about UFC 299 on Saturday night, of course, down in Miami, the main event, the Sugar Show showed out. Sean O'Malley took out Chito Vera. Let's go ahead and start there. First, just for those of us that weren't there, how cool was it to be in the house?
Atmosphere was awesome. The big theme all week, Sean, that was interesting was that, man, Chito kind of stole the fan show of it. I don't think everybody was expecting as much of Ecuador to represent as they did. So as much as, you know, this was supposed to be Sean O'Malley's first go of being like, hey, the feature champion, and he definitely had his part in it. I saw plenty of, fake pink and blue afros walking around the arena. Man, a lot of Ecuadorian flags, a lot of people adored Chito Vera, and it was cool to see his, you know, star kind of go along with it. It was pretty awesome. So just an awesome atmosphere back and forth, almost soccer-esque. It was an electric building. It was awesome.
And then the fight happened and Sean O'Malley dominated. Now, it wasn't, I guess, what we usually see, which is, you know, Sean O'Malley coming in there and knocking dudes out, but he threw a ton of punches. He won every single round. At the end of it, he basically said, see, I told you I'm undefeated. And to be honest with you, he was so dominant that I kind of agree with him that, like, he almost erased the one loss that he had early in his career against Chito Vera. Everything that O'Malley told us that he was going to do at this point, he's done, and he's defended his belt now again.
Yeah, he gets the first defense under his belt, which is huge. You know, he was so good, you know, really didn't have, other than maybe a couple strikes where you really felt like he was in any kind of danger. I don't know how the hell Chito survived that knee.
That was crazy. My bet too. What round was that? Round three? I had O'Malley by knockout in whatever round that was. It was two or three. And that thing would have put out a Toyota Camry. Like, I can't believe Chito survived that.
Yeah, me neither. In all honesty, you know, it's great that he reached the final horn, I guess, for pride. But, man, he took a beating. He really, really did. I guess you could say towards the end there with that liver shot that maybe, he had it all the way to the end. But that was kind of the worry going in. You know, we talked about with Chito, this was not necessarily the most deserving title contender, but it had a fun story to it. But we were watching him, and this is one of the problems with his style, is that he's a home run hitter. And if you go in there against a guy like O'Malley, who is, you know, going to dictate the distance and going to dictate the pace of the fight, you really are going to put yourself at risk in a situation like that. And that's what it was. He just got so far down. He just never really felt like he had a chance to really win the fight.
Here, a point that probably, as far as earned the fight goes, that probably should have been Sandhagen's or maybe Merab's fight to take. Although now we can put an end to the story. It was a fun one between Chito Vera and Sean O'Malley, which begs the question, what's next? Because he called out Ilya Topuria. And I know you're not as big a fan as the champ thing as a lot of other fans are. I love it. But it feels like that's what's next, because O'Malley's at the point where if he calls for it, he gets it, and he called for Ilya Topuria.
And look, I'm not going to hate it if that's what they end up doing. I just think that, you know, both of these guys are just, I guess Sean's been around a little bit more, so, you know, maybe that makes sense from his end, but Topuria just feels like he just got to the top. And, he, you know, I just feel like they both are in weight classes where there are good contenders, and defend a little bit more, cook this a little bit more, because I just don't think that everybody is necessarily clamoring to see it. We'll all be happy to see it, but I don't understand what the big rush is of having Sean leave bantamweight, which is this stack sick division, and featherweight, you know, finally maybe guys like Ortega get a shot to get to the title, or Max Holloway wins the BMF to come back down and fight for the belt again. So I don't know. Like, I'm not gonna cry about it if that's what they end up going with. I just think that, you know, I if you told me Marab or Topuria, like I kind of want to see if Marab can do this. I want to see what the ending of this run looks like for him. So I'm hopeful that it's still, he gets to stick around. It seemed like that's what Dana was weighing in on too, but it's if it does end up being that, I'm sure I'll fork over my money to watch it.
I was looking forward the last few days to talk to you about this card. Here we are, Brendan Tobin, Sports Machine, Sean Levine on Tapped Out right here on the BetQL Network. We appreciate you checking us out. The co-main event, I made some money on that one, because in hindsight, actually, you know what? Screw hindsight. Go back and check the podcast. We were talking about Dustin Poirier shouldn't be an underdog against Benoit Saint-Denis, and Dustin Poirier's resume, that guy's literally fought everybody. He's probably got the most impressive resume, if you count win, lose, or draw, of anybody in the UFC. And by the way, most of those are wins. Dude, he sees this Frenchman, Benoit Saint-Denis. He's like, I fought Conor McGregor, right? Like, I fought Gaethje. I fought Max. I fought everybody there possibly is. I don't care about this up-and-comer. He went off as a 2-1 underdog at BetMGM, plus 195. I got him by knockout at 4-1, and he kept trying for that guillotine, BT. Like, he kept trying to choke him out for whatever reason. And it's crazy, because when he kept it on the feet the whole fight, Poirier showed off his boxing. I mean, your boy Dia Davis did something, because his boxing looked sharper than ever. I don't know why he kept trying to jump guillotine. Now, maybe he knew something that I didn't, and I had my money on him by knockout, so just take that with a grain of salt. But eventually, dude, he found his chin like I thought he would, and I was dancing around the living room, bro. Your boy got paid. That was easy money, Poirier, by knockout.
He's a wild man. I mean, like, you know, the idea that you're just going to, you know, jump for the guillotine out
like
of
six times.
Just nonstop, and even, you know, go against your coaches and your training partners and everybody's advice to it just because he wants to do it. I think that's one of the cool things about Dustin is, you know, he's going to do everything on his terms. And yeah, man, I said about this card, you know, we talked about this, like a lot of the dogs didn't make sense. And this is probably the one in the brightest lights that didn't make sense
for sure
for Benoit. It was just a big jump up for him. It's a big jump up for him. It's one thing to go and take on the fringe guys who aren't even ranked. And then you're going in, you're taking on a guy who is, you know, going to the Hall of Fame one day. He's never lost back-to-back fights. And nobody is better in the chaos. Nobody's better in the pocket than Dustin Poirier with throwing those strikes, especially if you don't really have anything to break him down early. You know, Benoit talked a little bit about the idea that he had staff and that he didn't have his full gas tank. Bro, like, look, if, to me, the longer that fight goes, the worse it's going to end up being for you. And the fact that it only took a couple rounds is probably almost a merciful thing for him. But look, this just shows for Dustin that, yeah, he's still absolutely at the top and he's not a gatekeeper. And so for him, I don't know what the next perfect maneuver is, because, you know, people are saying, you know, he should get the title shot next. I would venture to guess that, you know, it's going to either be the Sarukian or Oliveira winner, or maybe the BMF title winner. But if we just see if we just saw Marlon Vera get a chance to go into the title shot, there's not a lot of bad arguments to have Dustin Poirier go in there and fight Islam, and they seem to be digging on Twitter.
And they've always got kind of the ace in the hole of, if Conor McGregor wins his fight whenever he comes back, and I assume that's going to be some point this calendar year, and I'm pretty sure that's against Michael Chandler, and I'm not going on what he says. I'm just at this point going on what I think. Then he's going to need another fight. And Poirier makes a lot of sense, considering the last time that we saw that, a lot of people have a question about the way that it finished with the injury and all that. So maybe that's what's next for Poirier, and that would be another huge payday. He's earned it, as you said, an absolute Hall of Famer, a beast, and easy money on Saturday night. We tried to tell you here on Tapped Out. That's your guy, Dustin Poirier.
I think the other thing, though, but I get it, like, who's going to turn down a Conor fight? But if I am Poirier, like, I've been there and done that. Like, you know, the Nate thing, I think, if you obviously ask Poirier straight up, like, which one would you want more, Poirier, would you want to fight McGregor or Nate? I think he'd almost want to fight Nate if he were to get a big fight, just because I feel like he's put the rest of the Conor stuff. Like, he came back after all those years, he knocked him out. The leg break was the leg break, and he's sitting there talking about his wife in the DMs and all that type of stuff. So you can give it to Conor. He was even saying in the post-fight press conference, when people were saying, you know, Conor tweeted about it, and he's like, oh, a couple of great fights because of a couple of great Frenchmen. And he goes, yeah, well, he knows about that right hook too. And he's just like, damn, that Poirier is cold, dude. He's just
diamond.
Don't go in there with him, Conor. That's bad news for you, dude.
That would be interesting, though, if Nate ends up back, and I assume he will be at some point officially in the UFC, if Conor was to beat Chandler and then they all need a fight, then you got those three guys kind of who would fight who. That would be nuts. All right, let's move on. MVP was fun. He was impressive. Kevin Holland didn't necessarily think so. I assume the live crowd down there in the 305 enjoyed MVP.
Yeah, I they liked the walkout for sure. The remixed Undertaker was a popular thing. It went off well, I think, with the audience, and it was an interesting fight. Seeing the showmanship between both of them, I thought that MVP definitely clearly won. Holland seemed frustrated. I think Holland's probably thinking to himself, man, can I get anything normal, you know, just for a run on him? Because, you know, he's had all these strange fights. You know, he's had close losses.
Well, that's on him too, though. He's a goofy ass. He talks to people, and he had to deal with Wonder Boy. Like, Kevin Holland's part of the problem.
Agreed. He definitely influences some of that too. But I wonder with him, you know, if he's ever going to get to that level of contending, because we see, like, the guy is dangerous, but it does feel like there. I wonder with him if there's a limit, or if there is going to be, you know, a next run for him. Is there, because he's almost like, you know, this day's and age, like, in a way, has some Masvidal or Cerrone to him where he'll take on anybody anywhere. But, like, what is the talent level here? Like, how high can this go? Because I've seen him do some pretty incredible things in that octagon before, but also I've seen him have some frustrating losses as well. But MVP looks good. I'm excited to see what his next matchup is going to end up being. I don't have an obvious one that comes off the top of my head, but I thought, you know, for all the Bellator guys that kind of struggle when they come over in their initial fights, he looked pretty good.
Kevin Holland, by the way, he's Bobby Green. He's tied to Ivasa. He's fine. You know, like you said, he's George Masvidal. Like, he wins some, he loses some. He's fun when he's in there, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer or anything like that. A couple minutes left here in this segment, and then we'll move on, because we had some huge boxing go down this weekend also. We got it all coming up for you here on Tapped Out. Dude, your boy Gilbert Burns took one against Jack Della Maddalena. What a scary knockout that was. Gilbert was out for a while. I'm not sure that I actually saw how that ended. Did he eventually get up?
He did get up, and I don't know if it was just the knockout on top of the emotion. He was really disappointed in a fight that he had won. Like, he was up on the scorecards. He was winning round three. He makes this critical error where they're in a scramble, and JDM just hits him with that knee, like, in the scramble, and that puts him down. That puts his lights out, basically, with a couple more strikes. So I think part of it also just had to do with Gilbert. You know, he was off for basically a year, and I think he thought to himself, man, 30 more seconds in round two, I probably choke him out. I was up 2-0 in the judges' scorecards. I was probably on my way to winning round three. And it's like essentially like a football game where all you have to do is take a knee and you get the win in your back pocket, and you fumbled the snap and the team returned it for a scoop and six. That's basically what happened to Gilbert. So I think that's part of why he was on the ground so long, why he was so emotional. felt terrible for him. He got a great reception from the crowd on the walkout, but definitely at his age, you suffer a loss like that to JDM. It's it leaves you scrambling a bit. But on the other side of things, man, Jack Della, first of all, the fortitude to come through with that fight, amazing. And then the big ones to call out Shavkat afterwards, man. You know, I think that got him a lot of fans from that night, because yeah, he kind of got away with a Hail Mary for sure. But then you come back and you say, well, I'm the scariest guy in the division. Put me against Shavkat. There's not much you can complain about there. That ain't an easy day at the office, and he's ready to test himself for real.
That shot, man, that Gilbert took was scary. Like, right between the eyes, put him down. He was out for a while. And I understand his disappointment, but damn, that thing would have put out a horse. And then to open the main card, I actually lost some money on this one. Piotr Jan by decision over Song Yadong. Song came out strong in the first round, and then Piotr Jan looked like old school Piotr Jan in the last couple of rounds. I actually went heavy on Song because he came out at BetMGM as a slight underdog. And you know me about Jan. I thought that he was washed for a while. Like, he's lost, what, now 3 out of his last 4 fights, and something came over that dude, and he took my money. So good for you, Piotr Jan. Coming up next, let's talk, speaking of good boxers like Piotr Jan, there were some huge boxing stories this weekend, as big as it gets. We talk about it next right here on Tapped Out.
We're back with more Tapped Out with Brendan Tobin and Sean Levine on the BetQL Network.
Welcome back into the show. That's Brendan Tobin. I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine. Good to have you along for the ride. Dude, boxing is alive and well. This weekend, it was all over the place. It was entertaining. And now we also know that Jake Paul is going to fight Mike Tyson. What? Yes, Jake Paul is going to fight Mike Tyson. But before we talk about that, Francis Ngannou got his ass knocked out by Anthony Joshua. Your initial thoughts, because I'm not that surprised that Anthony Joshua won the fight. I'm shocked that he knocked him down twice in two rounds and knocked his ass out cold.
Yeah, it wasn't even competitive. You know, if you listen to us, I told you I thought Anthony Joshua was going to win this fight. A lot of the reason was because just the way AJ has been looking. He's been very active. He's been looking very, very sharp. And, you know, people will go and look to, you know, the losses that he's had. But he has been looking really, really good up into this matchup. And I think the thing with Francis that he ran into for the most part is he just went in there with a guy who is a very dangerous puncher and trained. You know, like, I think the one thing with the Tyson Fury fight is, yeah, Tyson's not as vicious a fighter. A lot of the times that he can put you in danger is he's leaning on an opponent. He can outweigh an opponent. He couldn't really do that with Francis. And then he doesn't have just typical knockout power. You know, if it's a Deontay Wilder who he outweighs by 60 pounds and can get exhausted, yeah, he'll put him out. But that's not typically how Tyson Fury has won his belts. That's not how he's won his best fights. And so you're not in as much danger, I guess, if you're a Francis Ngannou. And then on top of it, doesn't seem like he trained really hard for that fight and, you know, put him down. Now in the AJ fight, AJ will always train really, really hard. The question with him really is just how gun shy is he going to be going into a fight like this? And he wasn't gun shy at all. Like, he simply did a little bit of body head work. And then, you know, it was just basically straight rights down the pipe that Francis just couldn't defend. And it was a really, really brutal loss. You were talking about scary things. We were talking about Gilbert Burns last segment. Man, he was out for a long time. They had to bring out the oxygen for him. I was really, really nervous when Francis went down like that. But I think you look at it, you're happy for him because you make a whole lot of money. But that is what everybody's talking about when you're talking about going into another sport. You're taking on the best of the best. That's probably what should happen. You know, he just happened to shock the world the first time around and let us all think that, hey, maybe he's always got the legitimate puncher's chance.
A lot to dissect on what you just said. Brendan Tobin, sports machine, Sean Levine, talking about boxing here on Tapped Out. You called it. You said that Tyson Fury came into that fight against Francis Ngannou kind of thinking, I don't need to train that hard. It's boxing. This is my sport. I can come in a little bit flabby and maybe not train as hard as I have to. So you can kind of say that he walked so Anthony Joshua could run. You know, like Anthony Joshua had the benefit of knowing, all right, if I don't train, there's a chance that this dude can win the fight. Because you and I both think that he won the fight on the cards versus Tyson Fury. So I guess we don't really have to ask what's next when it comes to Francis Ngannou's boxing career. Because now we know Ngannou goes into the PFL. And I think that maybe you could talk about his shine. Maybe a little bit of it's taken off because of the way that he got knocked out. Like, he was that monster that, you know, I honestly didn't think that a human being that big could go down in that way. Even with a guy like Anthony Joshua with a perfect right, I just didn't think that was all possible. So now Tyson Fury has to get through Usyk. And then do we see Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua? Is that kind of the path this is going?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if Tyson Fury can beat Alexander Usyk for sure, that's still a question mark, I think. I think Usyk's definitely got the skill. And listen, you see Tyson Fury in his last performance against Francis. You see that Francis put him on the shelf and made him delay this fight. And then you see what AJ did. It's hard not to have questions about where Tyson Fury's at and what he has to prove. And it's odd.
We're about to find out.
Yeah, it's odd that Anthony Joshua kind of restored his stock in better than anything that any pure boxing match could really do, any contender that he could take on. The fact that he wiped the floor with the UFC, the former UFC champion, the way that he did, and Tyson Fury did not, almost restores in a weird way Anthony Joshua's, you know, level in the eyes of boxing fans. Like, he kind of saved the honor of boxing in a weird way. It's been a while since, I think, AJ, probably since he won the belt against Klitschko, that he's belts like this beloved by the sport again.
I'm with you. And I was kind of like, at this point, thinking Anthony Joshua was getting old, and Tyson Fury was getting old, and Deontay Wilder was getting old, and Usyk's not that fun to watch. Like, I was thinking, the heavyweight division kind of sucks. Yeah, Anthony Joshua, okay. You're going to do that to dudes? I'm willing to watch. That's crazy, too. Like you said, that it's not just a knockout, but how vicious it was, and that he got knocked down twice. How surprised were you with the flow of the entire fight? So going into it, a couple of things as far as betting goes, and I texted both you and producer Jake this. The odds were really leaning towards Francis Ngannou. Like, he opened as a huge underdog. I think I saw as much as 6-1. Then it got down to 5-1, 4-1. By the fight, he was 2-1. That's it. He was plus 200, still the underdog, but not a heavy underdog. So you can make some good, what I want to call kind of easy money on the boxer. I didn't do it on Anthony Joshua. My bet was that both guys would get knocked down. So when Ngannou got knocked down in the first round, I'm thinking, dude, I'm looking pretty good here, because I was going to get plus 750 on that. It was pretty good odds, and it didn't happen because it didn't last long enough.
Yeah, and I just think that speaks to AJ did such a great job of being able to inflict his damage without really ever being at risk. Like, he was always going to just basically stay with a long reach with that 1-2. He was never going to be in a scramble where, you know, Francis was going to be able to land that hook in the pocket or some kind of wild thing. Like, he was always going to be a kind of a calculated assassin in that regard. He's a very, very strong puncher. You know, it's been tough because of how damaging the Ruiz fight was the first time he lost. And then the rematch, him knocking him down, but never really went for the kill. And then losing the Usyk fights the way that he did, even though he had good moments. So I just think that his stock was down, but this man, like, look, the reason he got to the heights that he did is because he was a vicious, dangerous power puncher, got to the belt as fast as he did for a reason, you know, beat the likes of Dillian White multiple times, has beaten Vladimir Klitschko in a big exchange between them both. Like, he has always had these tools, but, you know, has needed to, I think, find himself. Now, I don't know what this is going to mean the next time he's fighting Tyson Fury, because, you know, styles make fights. Tyson Fury could go out there and beat him. But I just think that with this particular matchup, he never really felt in danger. And I think the thing that was probably coldest about all of it was, like, he didn't even celebrate. I mean, he almost felt bad about what he did to Francis Ngannou. That was the crazy thing.
He probably thought he killed him, because I thought he did. Like you said, the oxygen came out. And it's only funny to say, because it didn't happen, because goodness gracious. Like, yeah, that was bad. So from Tyson Fury to Mike Tyson, where he's going to step into a boxing ring against Jake Paul. And some people like you roll their eyes and scoff at this, and I choose the other end. I'm like, I can't wait for it. And I told you so. It feels like this was where this was heading the whole time. If you remember, his first big fight was on the Roy Jones Jr., right? So it was Mike Tyson, yes. Roy Jones Jr., and that was the Nate Robinson fight, right?
That was the second bro fight, yeah.
That was Jake Paul, Nate Robinson. And that's when people were like, okay, this Jake Paul, he was Disney kid, kind of fun, whatever. I kind of saw this path coming at that night. It was like, all right, maybe at some point, because the size is about the same and the star power is huge still for both guys. Now that we're actually going to see this fight coming up on July 20th, the odds right now, Jake Paul minus 360, Mike Tyson is a 3-1 underdog. Does that feel about right to you?
Yeah, it feels right just because of the age, with Mike Tyson. It's been funny. 50. He's got to be 58 before he steps in the ring. He's currently 57. Good. He turns 58 in June.
Wow.
And the way everybody has talked about this has been interesting, because this is what Jake Paul should have been going for. I don't really understand what Jake Paul was doing with taking on the real boxers and I'm going to go be a champion. I don't really understand that. The whole point of it, of us tuning into Jake Paul fights, has been to say there's no way this is going to happen, or this is disgusting, or this is a disgrace. He gets you really mad at him, and then he, you know, has whatever performance happens. You know, we're supposed to be invested. So there is a part of me that's, like, proud of Jake Paul, because he's getting back to, all right, I'm not trying to really be a boxer here. I'm just trying to get you to fork over your money to watch me win or lose. So the fact that he has gotten us back here, I'm glad that he's gotten back to the task. But man, it's hard not to feel a little gross about it. I mean, I was there ringside to watch a 60-year-old Evander Holyfield lose to Vitor Belfort. The dude couldn't physically looked good. Reactionary wise, could not function. And I'm just worried that's going to happen to Mike Tyson. I know maybe he's moving a little more fluid in some of these videos. Dude, these videos are 90 seconds long. I'm worried about him. We've seen him at, you know, wheelchair cane because of his sciatica that flares up. Like, he shouldn't be doing this. And I'm very curious to see what the commissions do as far as the rules are concerned, because if it's not a real fight, I think it loses a little bit of its luster if they make it be an exhibition.
So, yeah, Tyson's, what, twice as old as Jake Paul. Going to be 58 the time they step in the ring if this goes down. You're right. It's good that Jake Paul's back in his own lane, because that was kind of fun for a while when he's fighting, you know, Nate Robinson. And his resume is kind of cool. Like, he's fought Nate Diaz, and he's fought Anderson Silva, and he's fought Ben Askren. Like, that's something to tell your grandkids about. So now that you get a chance to fight Mike Tyson, that kind of adds to all that lore. From the serious side of things, Mike Tyson, it's crazy the life trajectory that he's taken where, I mean, most people, he probably would have told you he'd be dead by the time that he was 25, 30 years old. And here he is at 50-something years old. He's finally feels like he's starting to, the last handful of years, the public loves him again, and he's kind of a popular figure and does, you know, he's got his podcast and all these things. Getting punched in the head by Jake Paul at this point in your life seems like a terrible idea, because Jake Paul does hit hard.
Jake Paul can hit hard. I mean, he is, I guess, technically going up in weight. So he's going to be taking on a pure heavyweight for the first time rather than this being at, you know, under the 200-pound limit. So I guess there's that element to it. But, man, I just can't get past the age. That's the thing here. Like, if this was 4 years ago and it was 54-year-old Mike Tyson who took on Roy Jones, I'd probably take Mike Tyson. But –
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem is, let's say Tyson comes out there, and I don't think he has any chance to win the fight. But let's say he did. Let's say Tyson knocks out Jake Paul, and it'd be a huge story, be trending all over the place, everybody be talking about it. Then Mike Tyson, well, he'd want to take another fight. You know what probably. I mean? Like, he can't win whether he wins or loses.
Well, I mean, look, if he wins, everyone's going to love him, because that's what everybody ultimately wants to see. It's not just what Tommy Fury did to Jake Paul, and you pitter-patter him, and you dance around, and you win a decision. We all... The paying public, we all want to see Jake Paul get knocked out.
That's by Mike Tyson. That'd almost be like, not only that would be awesome, that'd be hilarious. If that's amazing. How he gets knocked out.
It would be amazing. Yeah, it would be amazing. And especially if you got paid on it, if you want to take the value on Mike Tyson, by all means. I mean, do whatever you want to do with your money. But I just worry about him. There just is a time where a guy reaches his limit. And we saw this even with Anderson. Like, the thing that's interesting about this, because I have a lot, Mike Tyson's just revered in a different way athletically than even Anderson is, but we're UFC fans. So when he beat Anderson and he put Anderson on the canvas at the end of that fight, it's like that already had that feeling of me like, all right. So now he has this over Anderson Silva. Like, really? But this is going to be on a different level, because Mike Tyson is just in American, you know, sports lore, just at a bigger level than Anderson Silva is. So you're going to have this leading up to everybody getting crazy about it. And I think people are going to be severely disappointed, because Mike Tyson is old. He's old.
He is. But it'd be awesome if he ends up knocking out Jake Paul. We've also got some other good fights on the horizon. Just a couple of months away from Lomachenko versus Kambosos for the vacant IBF title. And then Ryan Garcia, I think on 420, is going to make the fight versus Devin Haney. Coming up next, speaking of fights, I fight you right here on the BetQL Network.
Sean Levine will step into the cage with Brendan Tobin in Are You Gonna Fight Me?
I'm gonna fight your ass.
Here on Tapped Out.
That's right, fight me like a man.
Only on the BetQL Network.
You know the rules. I want a good, clean fight. When I tell you to break, I want you to step back out my command and break. Now go back to the corner and come out fighting at the bell.
Out rolling along on your radio. I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine. That is my co-host turned, what would I call you? My adversary?
Sure.
What are you? Okay. You're the guy I'm about to fight. That's how the segment goes down. It's called You Gonna Fight Me. Would you fight me if I said Dustin Poirier is a top 10 all-time UFC fighter?
Oh, man, you're so much better at lists than I am as far as pure numbers. You love lists. You love lists. But, I'm going to say no, just because he's never won the Undisputed Championship. And so like that feels like a pretty big chunk missing from his resume. But I mean, as far as my all-time fighters, yeah, he's probably top three as far as guys I actually enjoyed watching in the cage do their thing. It was so awesome to see him do what he did to Benoit Saint-Denis. I'm very curious to see what intrigues him next, because I don't think he can go wrong with anybody right now. You know, everybody kind of, you have a fight like that, the odds makers are throwing dirt on your name. People think that this special forces French ops guy, dude, I tell you, I was sitting, they sat me up high. I mean, oof, I tell you what, they have so many people there. They sit the media, they sat everybody basically up top outside of a little table down there. But I was sitting like right atop of all the French fans that were there for Benoit Saint-Denis. They had the flags going. They had the crazy French-colored hair going. And, man, they went home sad. And I was delighting in it.
Yeah, they probably left saying, shit, got the bleu, je me fond de l'eau. I have no idea what I just said. Something from 8th grade French. I mean, I agree with you. He's probably on the outside looking in the top 10 now that I think about it. But his resume might be number one. And I'm being dead serious when I say that. He's fought Gaethje, Chandler, Oliveira, McGregor, Khabib, Holloway, Eddie Alvarez in his prime, Gaethje, Anthony Pettis, Eddie again. Like back in the day, was fighting Bobby Green, Michael Johnson, and Jim Miller. Like he has just literally fought everybody. And like you said, still at the top of his game. And you have to figure coming up next, it's maybe going to be either Conor McGregor again or Nate or somebody else for a championship. Like Dustin Poirier's found himself in a pretty good spot after losing that BMF title last time out against the aforementioned Justin Gaethje. All right, coming up on Saturday night, we've got fights. Tai Tuivasa in the main event versus Marcin Tybura. I think Ty knocks him out. You going to fight me?
I hope that he does. I mean, nothing against Marcin Tybura, but I like a world where Tai Tuivasa is in the win column and doing big things, and we get to see the shoey. I mean, who doesn't love to see that? And Tybura is just kind of like your run-of-the-mill heavyweight standard. Everybody just is like, you know, he's as solid as they come. So I definitely want to see that with Ty, but you know, you wonder with him, he's another one of these guys where it's like, he's got three straight losses. Not to slouches. I mean, he's gotten choked out by Volkov, lost to Pavlovich and lost to Surreal Gon. So gets to, I guess, take a bit of a breather here against Tybura, but it's a heavyweight fight, man. So that's always dangerous, no matter what weight class or what person they're putting you in there with, because As we saw with Curtis Blaydes and Jonathan Almeida, man, it just takes a hammer fist and it might put you out. These guys are big.
Yeah, and I almost hit that one. I had Blaydes in round three and ended up being Blaydes in round two. That's another one on that card that was fun. Speaking of fun, on UFC 300, our next main event, Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage. Bo Nickel's going to be champion one day. You going to fight me?
No, I'm not going to fight you. I found it interesting that everybody was kind of, I felt like there was almost like a bit of outrage that people were upset he was on the main card for 300. And I tell you, I don't get that. I feel like, you know, you have a card like this, you want to showcase a little bit of the next generation. I get it. You know, it's not the most competitive matchup in the world, but who doesn't want to see, you know, Bo Nickel do his thing with everybody kind of watching? It almost to me feels like the MVP Kevin Holland. Like you could probably argue that Almeida and Curtis Blaydes is more of a pay-per-view card worthy rather than some Bellator newcomer. And so you have a guy like Bo Nickel get back in there. Everybody he fights, basically he dusts in the first round. why wouldn't you want that to be on your feature card? I don't get that.
BMF is on the line also at UFC 300. That's Gaethje versus Max Holloway. Crazy stat, Max Holloway's never even been knocked down in his UFC career. You're going to fight me if I say that ends in the BMF fight at UFC 300. Justin Gaethje's definitely going to knock him down. I love Max as much as the next guy. Might knock his ass out.
I am going to fight you. I am fully subscribed into moosed up Max Holloway. Like, this dude, looks huge. Like, he looks like he's filled out the back. Max Holloway, you know, the daddest man on the planet now, is all of a sudden got the dad bod going a little bit. He's got he's filling out, you know, he's not just the lanky, you know, killer that Bless usually is. Like, I'm very excited to see what a fully enhanced 155 Max Holloway can do as far as damage is concerned.
You're acting like Gaethje's some pencil neck out there. Like, Gaethje gets pretty big too.
Big? He gets big. I'm just saying, like, you know, we already haven't seen this guy be knocked down by anybody. Now all of a sudden you put a little beef on him. I think we're gonna have a very durable Max. Didn't have to cut as much weight for this matchup. I think Max Holloway's gonna be even more durable in this one around
300. Yeah, you might not love the Jamal Hill, Alex Pereira main event, whatever, but the whole thing is stacked really nice for fight fans, where you can just get in front of your TV whenever that thing starts. And for the next 6-7 hours, most of the time, unless you're a big gambler and you like to bet on all the rounds and all the fights and how they're going to finish, like you and I, those early fights generally are kind of background noise. The early fights on 300 are awesome. And then the undercard and then the main. So the whole thing, like, for 6-7 hours is going to be phenomenal.
I also think, you know, I don't know if you saw or if you were taking a bathroom break or what, or a beer break during the card, but they showed the promo at the arena too. Damn, that was a good promo. And I honestly think that the promo they show where they just said it's the best night of fights ever assembled, I thought that should have been like, I'm like, man, they really nailed that. Because yeah, it's not necessarily, we don't have that holy bleep fight that's on here. But man, you can't say that there's really a bad matchup on here, and that every one of these is pretty damn even, maybe outside of Bo versus Cody Brundage, that every fight here could really be a coin flip and just has style clashes and could be awesome as far as fight fans are. Because man, that should have been their marketing plan the entire time, instead of dragging us out thinking there was going to be some super fight to save it. Because I thought the promo was on, but you know, Holloway's on the beach, Justin Gaethje's in the snow. Like, it was just so badass the way they put it together.
I'm with you. Like, it would have been better off promoting, hey, we got this card from top to bottom, it's gonna be awesome, instead of this one fight. Who cares about one fight? Like, if you're a fight fan, it's how's the whole night gonna go. Honestly, if Alex Pereira and Jamal Hill was in the middle of this card and you moved up, you know, Gaethje, Holloway to the main event, it doesn't make too much difference. Wei Li Zhang, her belt's on the line. My boy Charles Dubronx Oliveira's on the card. We already mentioned Bo Nickel. That's just the main card. Then on the prelims, Yuri Prochazka fights. Calvin Cateroma's guys kicked off the radio fights. Aljamain Sterling, Holly Holm versus Kayla Harrison in the UFC. Sadiq Lopez, and then the early prelims, Jalen Turner, Renato Moicano. Like, that's an awesome fight. And you're going to put that on the early ones. Bobby Green, Jim Miller, a fan favorite. And then to open the card, like, the first fight we get at UFC 300 is Davison Figueiredo versus freaking Cody Garbrandt. So if you're a fight fan, honestly, maybe you could complain like a month ago, but now that we've got this thing completely filled in, there's really nothing to complain about. I actually love the card.
Yeah, I do too. And it's been an incredible last few months of pay-per-views, you know, between getting the star rise of Topuria and Sean getting his, you know, his crowning achievement. And, you know, I'll give Sean some props on this, because that couldn't have been easy for him to walk into this week, probably thinking that he was going to be the toast of the town and everybody was loving him. He looked a little taken aback by, oh my God, like, there's a lot of people rooting against me here. And it did not faze him one iota. He looked absolutely tremendous. And I think just showed a lot of maturity that he probably thought, oh, everyone's going to love the Sugar Show. And that wasn't the case. And he almost, I mean, it's almost like he went into hostile territory and was able to, you know, take out the conquering hero story. And so did it in cold fashion as well.
Speaking of fan favorites, so it wasn't that long ago that Mike Perry beat MVP, remember, in a bare knuckle fight. Are you going to fight me if I say we're going to see Mike Perry back in the UFC?
I'm curious to, I'd be curious to know. The only reason I'd fight you on that is he is basically BKFC's guy. And so I don't know what the pay difference is between being BKFC's top guy and the UFC. If the UFC wanted to, I mean, sure, they could just say, yeah, here you go, MVP, or here you go, Mike Perry, you know, 600 grand a fight, whatever. But I don't know what his value is as far as that, because yeah, he was kind of a pedestrian up and down fighter, but you know, certainly has seemed like on his podcast that he has kept that line of communication open, and he's he would want to have those talks. But I don't know what is the appeal on the UFC side of bringing him back in.
Hey, before we get out of here, last thing, our girl Joanna Ojcheck, the Boogie Woman, officially inducted into the USC Hall of Fame. That must have been awesome to be in the house for that. We had a great interview with her. I love me some JJ. I think that her fight versus Wei Li Zhang is the best women's UFC fight of all time and a top five fight UFC, period. You going to fight me?
No. And I mean, honestly, that's that speaks to her, because she could go in just by herself and she could go into the fight wing with that fight. Very, very cool moment. And the thing that was cool, Dana White said afterwards, he's like, you know, we see this once in a while with some of these fighters that, you know, like a Forrest Griffin, like they'll be for around forever. He's like, yeah, she's going to be a lifer. She's always going to be around the UFC. She does great stuff for us. She was around, you know, South Florida. You know, she does live down here, but she was out at like the meet and greets. She was at, you know, the tour on the Everglades. So they really used her as a big time ambassador. And that was a really cool moment. I did see Dana White go over to her after that announcement was made, and deserving, absolutely deserving, A+ performer. And, you know, speaks to, I think, first of all, you know, was like the first star little woman to go out there and do that. But, you know, then also built up Rose Namajunas. I mean, Rose built her fame off of being able to beat JJ, because JJ was the Boogie Woman. Nobody felt like they could beat her, and then she beat her twice. So it was also she passed it on to other people in this division to make it a thing, the strawweight division.
I would say her rivalry with Rose, that's not easy to say, by the way, is also the best in the history of when on the women's side. Like, you can say Holly Holm and Ronda Rousey or whatever. When it comes to rivalries, I'll take that one every day. I could keep talking about this all day, but I got to go. That is Brendan Tobin. I'm the Boogie Woman. No, I'm not. I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine. For our producer, Jake, we'll talk to you next week right here on Tapped Out.